This is the Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
And today's a special day. I don't know if you are familiar with the anniversary that we remember today of what I personally think are one of the greatest apparitions of the 20th century. And I'm not just talking about Fatima. That's often associated there. Talking about the apparitions of the Virgin Mary in Zaytun, Egypt. And I want to tell you about these because here Our Lady said nothing, and yet she communicated to the masses. Here, whether you are Christian or Jew or whether you are Muslim, whether you are atheist, it didn't matter. She became visible to all. And this is an incredible, incredible moment in the 20th century and really, I think, for our faith. The year was 1968. It was a tumultuous year. If you remember the late 60s, the Vietnam was underway. There were protests in the streets of America. There were political riots. And, of course, the Middle East was also in tumult because of the Six-Day War that Israel had fought against Egypt the year before when Israel took the Sinai Peninsula from Egypt. And the Egyptians, of course, were reeling from that loss, and it cast their society into turmoil. So you can see the chaos of the late 60s, not just in our own country, but globally. And on April 2nd, something incredible took place. There was a Muslim bus mechanic. His name was Farak Mohad Atwa, and he was working in the evening across the street from this church. It was St. Mary's Coptic Church in a place called Zaytun in a district of Cairo. And as he was working, he happened just to glance up at the church, and he saw a lady. He saw what he thought was a lady getting ready to throw herself down to the ground, to commit suicide is what he thought. And he pointed it out to the others who thought the same thing. So they called the police, and soon a crowd gathered around this church. But this woman on the top of this big dome, on top of this church, she never threw herself down. Instead, she simply vanished. Well, the police chalked it up to some sort of trick, right? It had to be. Trick of the lights, mass hallucination from these people. There had to be a logical explanation for this. But a week later, that same woman was back. And the same thing happened. She was visible to everyone there and then disappeared. And for the next 3 years, she would appear off and on at the same church for varying lengths of time with all kinds of different phenomena associating or accompanying these apparitions. They would see luminous doves at night. The smell of this powerful incense would roll down the streets. I mean, investigations went in to see if there was some sort of machinery behind these manifestations. And there's no explanation for what took place. In fact, the images that were captured here are spectacular. Competent eyewitnesses, experts in the field have examined them. They're not doctored. And actually, there are photographs capturing the Mother of God. I many years ago, produced a documentary called Marian Apparitions of the 20th Century, and one of the segments that I included in this film was on these Zaytun, Egypt apparitions. And there, if you have that documentary, you'll be able to see, I included much of the film. I have eyewitness reports. In fact, you're going to hear, coming up here in just a moment, from a woman who was present for those apparitions in 1968. Her name is Pearl Zaki. She's 94 today, but she's going to be joining us, along with a man who has done wonders to promote this. But just to give you perspective before we get into our conversation here, I just want to help you to better understand the significance of this. I personally believe, this is my personal belief, that we live in very special times, that God is reaching out to mankind in an unprecedented fashion. And if you look back at just the past several decades, we on Earth have been experiencing what I would call a major supernatural episode. There are reports of unusual events, spiritual events, and they're coming from every habitable continent. They came from deep within the former Soviet Union, where under communist rule, there were reports of towering apparitions of the Mother of God. And she came announcing the fall of communism. I was present in the jungles of Africa before the great genocide that would take place there in 94. I was there for the last approved apparition of the Mother of God, where she came earlier to these seers warning of genocide. She warned of the return of Jesus Christ. I've been present in war-torn Yugoslavia, where the Virgin has been reported to appear since 1981 down in South America, where a mystic claimed to have visions of the Mother of God, where the sun would spin on a mountainside in Venezuela. I spoke to a nun in Akita, Japan, who saw a statue weep 101 times. Those tears, no explanation for them, were human tears. And Mother of God spoke to her as well. Those are just a few, whether it's Europe or Asia or Nicaragua or the Middle East, in Africa, even here in our own country, come reports of an apparitional woman calling herself the Blessed Virgin Mary. And she's appearing to visionaries. She gives them inspiration and instructions and messages. And in some of these, warnings about the future of the world. Our Lady came there. Fatima was the daughter of Muhammad. Is it possible that the Virgin Mary appeared in 68 to Muslims and Jews and Catholic Christians as well as non-Christians for a particular message? Or reports of her appearing in Iraq and in Syria? Will it be the Virgin Mary, the Mother of God, who will bring about a great conversion of our Muslim brothers and sisters, just as she did in Aztec Mexico back in 1531? I'm joined this afternoon by a good friend of mine, longtime friend. In fact, if it wasn't for him, the film I produced, Marian Apparitions of the 20th Century, never would have been possible. It really was. I've got to credit his vision, his dream, and his efforts behind the scenes that made that possible. And that's a film that looks at the apparitions of the 20th century and shows that even though the Mother of God's appearing in separate places, these are all intertwined. And there's a much bigger message that the Mother of God is appearing. His name's Bob Ott, and he joins me today. Bob, thank you for all you do. And it is so good to have you here with me today on this anniversary.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Let's put some perspective on this. And in particular, Zaytoun, you and I were talking briefly, you know, how these photos were not doctored and how these perhaps are, you know, one of the most spectacular apparitions. I mean, to actually capture photographs of the Virgin Mary is mind-boggling. But your thoughts, I want you to take it away.
Yeah, so there's a uniqueness to this apparition site, as you mentioned, that's extraordinary. To my knowledge and my investigation, there's nothing like this ever to have happened in the world. So the uniqueness is that in most apparition sites, Our Lady chooses one or sometimes a couple of visionaries to show herself to. However, in this particular situation, most everyone, and Pearl Zaki will attest to this, most everyone who actually is there when she appears gets the opportunity to see her, which is very, very unique. The second thing that's, I think, extremely unique is the pictures themselves. And I know that there has been a lot of investigation, and I think there's at least 12 pictures that we know that were taken, and they have been looked at and analyzed scientifically in so many different directions by so many different people to see if there's any possibility that they've been tampered with or doctored up, and they have not been. So here's a situation where actually we have an opportunity to actually view a picture, a photo of our Blessed Mother. Now that is in itself incredibly unique. People may question, why did Mary appear here and why so often here? Well, if you study the history of our church, you'll know that the Blessed Mother and Joseph fled to Egypt. Well, this area where she's appearing is where she lived with Joseph and the baby Jesus for a number of years. And I'm sure those were very special years to Mary, so very special to her heart. So that's one reason why I think she came here. But Pearl's going to talk a little bit about that as well in terms of her feelings as to why she appeared there and what it means for everyone. But the Jewish people, the Muslims, mm-hmm. The Christians, the Coptics, every religion saw her and were very moved by it. And it truly affected the entire country of Egypt when she appeared there.
And most apparitions, Bob, they're limited to a chosen few. I mean, if you take Fatima, mm-hmm. three children saw her. If you go to La Salette, two children saw her there. You know, even in Champion, Wisconsin, the approved apparitions in our own country. Just Sister Adele saw her. Young Adele Bryce saw her, and you know, the companions did not see her. Quite often, it's invisible to those who are around. I would have been present for many apparitions, mm-hmm. but they were not for my eyes. They were simply for the seers. When I was in Africa, Alfonsina Moriki had her last vision. I was right next to her when the Mother of God appeared. and yet I could not see anything. Right. This apparition is so unique in that perspective because, you know, she appeared to the masses, and I'm curious as to why that is, because she never spoke a word. Like in Knock, where she appeared, there was no word spoken, yet she communicated a very powerful message.
Well, so her actions, though, too, Drew, were this. She didn't say a word, but her actions said a lot. In other words, if you study all of her appearances, they have they've been looked at in terms of what she actually did. 90% of the time, her hands were folded. She was praying. She was kneeling in front of the cross many times. A few times she actually had the baby Jesus she was holding. And other times she would be blessing the people. There were even times where people said rays came from her hands right down to the people as she was looking at them, as if she was blessing them with the graces coming from her hands. So there were a lot of silent words, you might say, that were being said by her actions and what she did.
Well, I think it's a message that she's the mother of all people. You know, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Jew, whether you're Christian, she's all of our mother. And she came in a very troubled time in human history. And I think that is a very telling message. Before I go to Pearl, I also want to, Bob, just get your perspective, because I really think, I think back to Aztec Mexico when there was so much, you know, pagan worship. There was a culture of death that was so prevalent at the time. We had the Protestant Reformation taking place in the 1531. At the same time, the Mother of God appears over here as well. And we have 9 million conversions to the Catholic faith. Our Muslim brothers and sisters, I hope, will one day come into the faith. And if anyone is going to bring about that conversion, I've always personally held the belief that it would be the Mother of God that would kind of facilitate that transition. Your thoughts on that? What role do you see her playing in the new evangelization, in particular for bridging the gap between Islam and Catholicism, Christianity?
Yeah, I personally believe, just from this apparition that took place in 1968 through 1970, and by the way, Our Lady has appeared there since that time a number of times. But so the majority of the people in Cairo, Egypt, saw Our Blessed Mother. And men, I think the percentage of Muslim was very high. I'm not sure what the percentage was, maybe 70, 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So they, in their hearts, because I went over there and I spoke with many of them, in their hearts, a lot of them have a great love and honor for Our Blessed Mother, and they know who she is. So they may not always speak it necessarily, but they know Mary is real, that she appeared. And I believe, Drew, as well, that, you know, Mary is going to be the one who is going to lead our Muslim brothers and sisters lead them to Christ, so to speak. You know, she was the one who introduced, our Blessed Mother, when introduced Christ to the world back then.
Right.
And she's doing it again.
If you are just tuning in, I'm speaking with Bob Odd, a longtime friend of mine, a man who has been a champion of spreading devotion to the Mother of God and was really the catalyst behind the Marian Apparition of the 20th Century film, a film that I produced many years ago, narrated by Ricardo Montalban at the time, and it took a look at many apparitions and why they were taking place. One of the ones we featured in that film was the Zaytun apparitions, where the Virgin Mary appeared in Egypt, in Zaytun, a suburb of Cairo there. And of course, this is perhaps one of the most visible and most incredible. Many people witnessed these visions. They described them in vivid detail. They went on for years, 2 to 3 years, these apparitions took place. I want to share with you right now a woman I interviewed, and here's part of her eyewitness testimony of what she saw. Listen to this.
We even had our servant, and she doesn't understand anything in Christianity, and she was jumping up and down because she saw her, and it's like you feel all the chills, you know. It's not like a simple thing. It's really very, very touchy, and your whole body is different, and you start you don't know what, you know, if you're crying, you're screaming, you don't know what to do. And the girl started, you know, she was 17, 18 years old, and we started asking her, maybe we are not seeing right. And we told her, what are you seeing? And she said that she's seeing a lady with a, she didn't even know the halo, but she said with a crown full of light bulbs, because that's how bright she was. And we saw her like in a frame, like in a picture, and then standing as a whole with fluorescent light. She was very neat.
A crown of light bulbs, a crown of light is how you translate that, you know, a luminous crown over the head of this woman, this the mother of God. I'm joined right now by a woman who was there in 1968, who personally witnessed these apparitions. Her name is Pearl Zaki. She's now 94 years of age, still sharp as a whip. I had the great opportunity to talk to her over the weekend, and I invited her to share her story with you. And Pearl, great to have you. Happy anniversary today.
Thank you, Drew, and thank you, Bob. It's a great pleasure to hear your story of Zaytoven. It is so wonderful and brings me back to the time that I went there so many years ago. I flew into Cairo to visit my husband. My husband was Egyptian, to visit his family. And after I arrived there, I spent several days doing other things, but I had forgotten that the Virgin Mary was at that time appearing at St. Mary Church. But it was a little while before I got to go there. But the first night I went, we sat about 9 hours from, say, 9 in the evening till the early morning. And then I went 3 more days, and I had heard the people praying and doing prayers and thanks, but I still had been there 4 days and hadn't seen Virgin Mary. But I took one day off, and I decided I needed to take a break to see other people, and I went to visit the Holiness Pope Corollas VI, who was at that time the head of the Coptic Orthodox Church, and he gave me the blessing. And I asked him, and the only English words that I was able to hear from him was, mm-hmm. when I asked, when am I going to see the Virgin Mary? He said, you will see her tonight.
Wow.
So I went back, and I was hoping and praying and thanking God for this great privilege. And my son and I, my son who was with me, we sat through the night till about 4 o'clock in the morning, and the people were sleeping, some sleeping on carpets and sitting with family. Most were from each group were awake, watching and waiting. And suddenly the big surge of the crowd stood, crying, praising, thanking God. This huge light, it was around light with a very purple edge on the outside over the top of the big dome. And within this light stood the Virgin Mary with her hands held in front of her. And she turned as she moved them at some times with her hands were held not upside down, but down as if she was blessing the people. And she stayed for a few minutes, and then she just vanished into nothing. There was nothing there. A lot of people could smell the fragrance of incense during some of her appearing. But at this particular time, she just came back a second time and repeated the same and disappeared, and that was my evening. I had seen the Blessed Mother. She didn't speak, of course. And then I went away for a few days, and then I came back for 3 more days. And on the third day of my last visit there, I saw her. She appeared as if standing on the flat roof of the church, and there are domes, one on each corner. This is a typical Coptic church. She moved and glided around on the roof as if she was blessing the people. And some people told me that they could see the blessings go down from her hands onto the people. I didn't see that. But then her whole person, like, just moved off down to the ground, and then she vanished. That was the third time. The second time I saw her. But then when she disappeared, we just went home. It was just a glorious time. Wow. And I talked with so many had seen her. So many had been healed.
Wow.
I met some of the people who were healed and came, and so many came back to the church. I met the bishop who was in charge, and he described his working and trying and seeing how the people responded. It was
well, Pearl. I only have a few.
Hardly explain.
What an extraordinary gift from heaven for you. What do you think the Virgin Mary was trying to communicate? What's her message? What was your takeaway from this experience?
I can only see that since she was a silent virgin mother, that she didn't say any word to anyone. If I was standing in a group of people, and the person standing next to me, she would see the same thing I saw. She spoke to no one, I see, so that she could reach everyone and speak to everyone. And that's how I see it, that why she didn't speak. However, in the early days, as you mentioned before, when she was on the roof, they said the people calling to her, Muslim, don't jump, don't lady, don't jump. They thought she was going to jump down. And he just spoke to her in a way. And from that time, I started to hear and see what people's opinions. So many can tell the same story.
Yeah.
They thought, even a bishop who went thought it was a lady, and that she would, I think he then went during the time when they declared it was the Blessed Mother, but he also wanted to go up and touch her on the roof. But some poor man said to him, Father, did you think you could really go up there and touch her?
That's awesome.
He said, I went back down and stood and watched her. He watched her for several hours going back and forth on the church. She didn't speak at any time.
All right, I got to hold it right there. That's Pearl Zaki. My thanks to Bob Ott, and a fascinating apparition. Of course, the apparitions in Zaytun, Egypt. I need to take a short pause here. When we return, I'll change gears. Something important to share. Stay with us.
The Lady of Fatima told the three children she would come again to speak further with Lucia concerning two requests. The first, that Holy Communion be received on the first Saturday of five successive months to be offered in reparation. This apparition came to pass December 10th, 1925.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Do you remember what happened last week? That, by the way, was Ricardo Montalban from the film Marian Apparitions of the 20th Century talking about an aspect of the message from Our Lady of Fatima. Historic, huge, huge day, right? Last week. I was able to have the great privilege of being on the air with Father Frank Hoff and Father Rock, your executive director, as we co-anchored the consecration of Pope Francis, consecrating Russia, Ukraine, and the world to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And, of course, this was a re-echo of what was done on March 25th, 1984, by John Paul II, a consecration that was accepted by heaven, right? We focus on that whole aspect. Consecration, consecration, consecration. And believe me, it's important. There's a grace that comes with it, and things change, no doubt about it. But there's also an aspect of this message that's forgotten, something that Our Lady requested. And it's something that I thought today would be the perfect day to share with you. I think it's important. I think it's part two of what we need to do. I think consecration is the gun. I think first Saturdays might be the bullet. You know, these two things go together. And it's often forgotten that Our Lady of Fatima requested First Saturday devotion to be observed to ensure Russia's conversion. When Our Lady appeared to Sister Lucia de Santos, not the 1917 apparitions, but she appeared years later. Lucia now had become a nun, and she appeared to her on December 10th, 1925. And Our Lady made a request to her there in that apparition for something called First Saturday Devotion, and she wanted it for the conversion of Russia. And, you know, the consecration was not only, it wasn't the only requirement for the conversion of Russia. And I think we need to do this today for the conversion of Russia. Well, you know, Our Lady included the request for this observance of First Saturday devotion. And she said, when you see a night illumined by an unknown light, know that this is the great sign given to you by God, that he will punish the world for its crimes by means of war, famine, and the persecution of the church and of the Holy Father. To prevent this, I come and I ask for the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart and the communion of reparations on First Saturdays. If my requests are heeded, Russia will be converted and there will be peace. If not, she will spread her errors throughout the world, causing wars and the persecution of the church. Well, we know what happened, right? This vision was, 1925? You're talking maybe a decade and a half later. We see Adolf Hitler going to Poland. We see the Second World War begin to rage, and we've seen everything that she prophesied would come to pass. So we have Pope Francis now, doing a global consecration in union with bishops and the faithful the world over. I think we're going to see grace from that. But I think we still have to do what Our Lady requested, and that is First Saturday devotion. Tomorrow is a First Saturday, and here to explain the importance of this, to tell you the promises associated with it, to help you understand how simple this is none other than Barb Ernster. She is the communications director for the World Apostolate of Fatima. And check out the great work they're doing. It's BlueArmy.com. They've been great contributors to the program over the past couple years, and it's always good to have either Barb or Dave with me. And Barb's here today. Barb, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me again, Drew.
I always delight in having you. You are a great historian. You know the era well, and you know this message intimately. So, last week was a great day. I mean, we all celebrated it, and I'm expecting great grace to flow from that. But, you know, so often overlooked, as I was stating, is this request for First Saturdays. That didn't go away. That didn't end just because the 84 consecration took place or because some of these events unfolded. Bring us back in time. What happened? What's the context of this request? And take me to the present, too, across those decades. Why do we need to do it today?
Well, I like to look back and, Mary was she said few words at Fatima, but they were very powerful and they were very direct and they were very serious. And in the June apparition, June 13th, the children, that's when she showed them her Immaculate Heart covered in thorns and it was dripping blood. And Lucia said, we understood it to be the Immaculate Heart in need of reparation. So these kids had interior not messages, but they had understanding that came to them of what they were always seeing. And, you know, to see the Blessed Mother as she radiated the light of God and then to see this heart. And, of course, that's the same apparition where she said, God wishes to establish in the world devotion to my Immaculate Heart. This was something that God was bringing to mankind at this time. I always think back, when you go back and read St. Louis de Montfort, I always say that this was what he was writing about. This was the time he was hoping for, that now the Mother of God is going to bring this special devotion to the people, and they're going to learn from her and be formed in her heart. And, you know, look what's happening in our world. Our children are being swallowed up by the errors of communism that spread, the atheism that spread from communism that came out of Russia. And we're fighting for their souls. And what happens in the book of Revelation when, you know, the woman, the crowned with the 12 stars, is she's protected, she's taken to the desert, but what does Satan do? He goes after her children. So all of us who are devoted to Mary, who are faithful in our Catholic faith, we can see that Satan's trying to get at our children too. And so I think we have a real prominent role to play in joining with the woman clothed with the sun, with the 12 stars, in fighting back the evils of our time. And the First Saturday devotion was intended to help prevent the atheism that came out of Russia, that became politicized. You know, there was a lot of atheism and godlessness and all kinds of different philosophies that were forming in the Enlightenment period. And even if you can go back to the Lourdes, when Our Lady came and said, I am the Immaculate Conception, that was a statement to some of these philosophers who were denying original sin and denying God. And she makes a statement, I am the Immaculate Conception. And this is one of the blasphemies that we are repairing for when we do the First Saturdays, the blasphemies against the Immaculate Conception, against all those people who don't believe in original sin, who doesn't think that sin exists and we can do whatever we want. I mean, so you can go back and examine what Our Lady said, the consecration, the First Saturday devotion needed to convert Russia. It meant it was to prevent this from going all over the world and becoming entrenched in our politics and in our national policies and other governments. And so now here we are today, and we're seeing the devastating effects of the annihilation of the spirit of people. And many, many, many souls are going to hell because there has been an annihilation of God in the systems that have been set up in the hearts of our children, in the hearts of many, many people. And so when we go and make reparation to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, that grace can start to flow like a river. And she said that the more people do this, the more the grace will flow through me like a river, and it will draw people to me. She's such a great gift to us, Drew, that God gave her to us, and she wants us devoted to her Immaculate Heart. And this is one way we show that devotion, by giving her once a month some time on a Saturday, which is something that St. Louis de Montfort said too, to set aside special time for her every month, and say the rosary, all the things that St. Louis de Montfort said we should do to show a devotion to her, to be consecrated to her, is in the Fatima message. It's how we live it every day.
Yeah, I love it. My guest today, Barbara Ernster, I'll tell you, if you want to join us, I'd love to have you join the conversation. You're welcome here anytime. Let me give you the number. We have a few minutes left today. So if you got a question about the consecration, about First Saturdays, about Fatima, about where we are, the number for you is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And, of course, I'm glad to incorporate you in the conversation. The promises of First Saturday devotion. I mean, Our Lady told us the promises of praying that rosary. The promise of First Saturday devotion, she promised to assist all those who practice the devotion of First Saturdays on these five consecutive months with the graces necessary for salvation at the hour of death. Maybe you can unpack that. Our Lady always wants to give us something back for giving something to her in some respect. So that's a pretty powerful promise.
It is, and I will tell you, I had an experience with her one time where I was in, our family was really going through a tough time, and I felt her presence. It was just a brief presence. And it was like she was saying to me, I'm here to take over. And there was just such a sense of power there. I can't even explain it, Drew. Whenever you have a brief experience of God, you can't explain. You can't put words to it, which is why the children at Fatima couldn't explain things. But all I said is, I want that power standing next to me if I'm ever facing hell, because there was such authority. And I just felt I was covered in protection because of her. I mean, I can't, like I said, I can't explain it, but if I were ever standing before the gates of hell, that's what I want next to me. So at the hour of our death, if she's there to help us with all the graces of necessary for our salvation, and when we pray to St. Joseph and asking him for a happy death, and even the promises of the nine First Fridays. Today is the First Friday, and I think Jesus promises the same thing to those who complete the nine consecutive First Saturday or First Friday communions. So these are all graces that we obtain for our lives. That doesn't mean we can go live however we want and not have to work towards our salvation, but she's going to be interceding for us throughout our entire lives and making sure we're getting to heaven. That's a great promise. That is the great promise of the First Saturdays.
There's almost divine providence at work here. It's kind of strange, because you're right. I forgot First Friday. This is First Friday. It's April the 1st, right? And tomorrow's First Saturday. And how they go hand in hand, just like the Feast of the Sacred Heart and the Feast of the Immaculate Heart go hand in hand. So two powerful devotions. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a short pause. Barbara, when we come back, let's grab two telephone calls. Let's take a few telephone calls. I'll take as many as I can when I come back. I have a few minutes on the other side, and talking about, I think, a great devotion that should be embraced. You'll be blessed by doing this, And I believe the world will be transformed. If you want to get in, again, I'll give you the number, and we'd love to talk with you. 888-914-9149. We're talking First Saturday Devotion, another part of the Fatima message that really complements what took place 1 week ago, the consecration of Russia and the world to the Immaculate Heart. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Facts and faith over fear. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So good to be with you today. Thank you for allowing me to give you a look at life you probably won't find anywhere else. And if you enjoy the broadcast, please tell others about it. I'm on every day, Monday through Friday. We replay the broadcast Saturday and Sunday. I am on 2 to 5 Central, 3 to 6 Eastern, noon to 3 on the Pacific Coast and around the country. And anytime on the app, you can always go back and listen to something you might have missed here. I'm joined today by Barbara Ernster, Communication Director for the Blue Army, and we're talking about an often forgotten aspect of the Fatima message. Consecration is so important, but something else that we should be embracing and practicing is First Saturday Devotion. There's great promise that Our Lady gave to all of us who will do it, and she's here to answer your questions as we talk a little bit more about it. Barbara, the lines are pretty full. I want to get to the phones in just a quick second, but let me just let you follow up here so you know how time will fly. Consecration is super important, and it's been done now multiple times, and I'm waiting to see the fruit of that. But First Saturday Devotion, I'll let you follow up some final thoughts on that.
Well, the First Saturday Devotion was the part we were supposed to do, and I you know, it's all about this whole business of us consecrating ourselves to Mary and letting her use us. And you know, Lucy stated over and over that the First Saturday's devotion would help make the conversion of Russia more perfect. It was, at first, it was supposed to help achieve that consecration to be done, and then to help make it more perfect. Now, when she talked about Russia converting, she didn't mean convert to the Catholic Church. She meant turning away from atheism. So what are we doing right now? We're dealing, like I said earlier, with all of the fallout of that atheism having spread. So our First Saturdays merit grace for those atheists, merit grace for others. And just like St. Louis de Montfort, when he asks us to become holy slaves of Jesus through Mary, and that what we give to her, we give her our treasure, and she takes that grace and goes and does something with it that we don't know anything about. And so we're meriting grace for people who might otherwise be going to hell, who might be losing their souls, and we're letting our hearts be formed by her. We're giving ourselves to her as gift on First Saturdays, just like our Lord gave her to us. And it doesn't take much to do these. So it's a real, and it's a beautiful, beautiful devotion. Again, practicing it, you get more out of it than you give. So,
amen to that. Well, let's do this. We'll jump into the phones, grab a few calls from around the country. Jim's been waiting in Minnesota. Jim, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew, and hi, Barbara.
Hey,
Barbara.
Hi.
How does one go about making the First Saturdays? What do you have to do?
All right, great.
Okay, so what Our Lady asked for was to go to confession, and you can go 8 days before or after, even up to 20 days, as long as you're in a state of grace when you go to Holy Communion on First Saturday. So she asks you to go to confession, receive Holy Communion. The Holy Communion can be at a 5 p.m. Mass if you're doing a Saturday evening anticipatory Mass, and then to pray a 15-decade rosary, and then to spend 15 minutes additional meditating with her on the other mysteries of the rosary. And I always say that's when I ask Our Lady to sit with me, and I start meditating, and I let her take me where she wants me to go. It's not that you got to sit and check off every other mystery of the rosary. And of course, at the time there were only 15 mysteries. Now there's 20. So
yeah, true.
Did I say 15 decade? I meant a 5 decade, a 5 decade rosary.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to do it in reparation for the blasphemies against the Immaculate Heart. So that's how we're making up for the thorns that are encircled around her heart that the children saw during the June apparition.
Yeah, pretty powerful stuff.
Can
Jim,
you
thank
do
you.
Just,
yeah, go ahead.
Can you do just one 5-decade rosary, or do you have to do all 15 or 20?
A 5-decade. You
just
do
five.
A 5-decade rosary. and then you spend 15 additional minutes meditating on the other rosary. Sometimes if you have a Saturday morning mass and confession at a church, and you don't have to do it all at once. You can, maybe you get up in the morning, do your rosary and your 15-minute meditation, and then you get to mass and confession later. It's just that first Saturday, you're setting yourself aside that day to kind of renew your purpose and devotion to the Immaculate Heart. And it strengthens your resolve and motives to carry out your sanctification of daily duty and daily rosary and the other things that Our Lady asks for at Fatima.
If you think
it's
about
to be done in preparation for these blasphemies.
If you think about this, Jesus appeared to Saint Faustina, right? And he was appearing to her, in the 30s, in May of 1930. Jesus himself asked for these, right? He said, "Hey, there are five kinds of offenses, blasphemies against the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Again, the blasphemy against the Immaculate Conception, against her virginity, against her divine maternity." Those who seek to publicly implant in the hearts of children indifference and disrespect and hate for the Immaculate Heart, and fifth, those who revile her directly in her sacred images. So this is the message of Jesus, right, Barb? This is a powerful message from the Lord himself.
Yeah, he's the one who defined for Lucia why there were five, because she was asked by her spiritual director, well, why is there not nine, like there's nine First Fridays, and so Jesus explained to her, because there's five blasphemies. These blasphemies are deeply offensive to God, and they're great sins against him. And so you do five consecutive First Saturdays to make up for those five blasphemies, doing these elements. But then afterwards, do another set of five, or just do them every month. Just like when I pray the rosary, I offer each decade up for one of the five blasphemies.
Yeah.
You're just recalling this when you do these.
Let's go back. We'll take a few more calls before I do, because I know time will get by me. I'm curious, Barb. You've been a promoter of Fatima for a very, very long time. We had this unbelievable moment last Friday where the world united in a way that was probably even greater than 1984, just because of the technology we have. We have tablets and cell phones, and we've got the internet and social media and all sorts of ways to communicate, and we had so many bishops and the faithful praying in churches around the world. Your expectation, what do you think is going to come from this consecration a week ago by Pope Francis?
Well, my hope has always been that this consecration will be recognized by the Orthodox Church as well and bring greater unity between the Roman Catholic and Orthodox churches for the sake of the full body of Christ on earth. I just feel like we're in schism with each other. We're like two siblings fighting, and they have great devotion to the Mother of God. There's just very few things that, you got to go back in history and look at what caused the schism. But, I feel like that is what a triumph of the Immaculate Heart will look like, that there will be a union between the two again. And when that happens, someone told me, when that happens, all the arguments for Protestantism will fall apart. And I don't know, he didn't give details, but that's a power. That would be an ecclesial earthquake, as I've been seeing in some of the headlines lately. Ecclesial earthquakes. This is...
I saw that same article.
Yeah. So right now, but what we're trying to repair is the atheism and the godlessness and the totalitarian systems that are being built where the state is your God. That's what we're trying to fight right now. And if the two could come together, and now we got a united church under the Immaculate Heart of Mary, that's going to be powerful. Now we're going to see all these things coming out of wokeness and Disney and all that stuff going after our children. It's going to start to collapse.
Amen. I'm with you. I think Our Lady's the key. Let's go to the phones and grab a couple quick calls. Emmanuel in Los Angeles, you're on with Barb Ernster. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Quick question. So our Protestant brothers and sisters, or separated brothers and sisters, could be at risk of like losing their salvation or their soul, because I understand they do say awful things about our Blessed Mother. So I'll leave you at that.
Thank you. Barbara, we'll pick up on that. I mean, that's a powerful message, the some of the five that we just went through. The fifth one is those who revile her directly in her sacred images. And, you know, that's one of the great Protestant arguments, you know, that we worship Mary, which we don't. And of course, there are people who blasphemed her. You probably remember the Brooklyn Museum of Art exhibition that they had probably 10 years ago or so, where they covered a beautiful image of the Mother of God in elephant dung and in genitalia.
Right.
And you could not think of anything more blasphemous than that. Here we have the immaculately, you know, conceived Virgin Mary with divine maternity being mocked and ridiculed that way. So who is this directed to? I'm assuming it's directed to all people. And in terms of the Protestants, if they don't know what they're doing, then you know, the culpability is not necessarily there. But your thoughts.
Right. Okay, what I see the people mocking her in that way are the atheists and the people who are godless. I'm not saying the Protestant brothers and sisters who just look at Mary differently are going to hell. That's not what I'm saying. It's these godless philosophies and the Enlightenment period, you know, the theology, the modernism, all this stuff that's coming out that is influencing people away from God completely, and Mary's trying to bring them back. So the Protestant brothers and sisters have a misunderstanding. They don't understand our veneration of Mary. But what this does do is unite us again with them. It's going to maybe help them to see her a little more in clearer light. So we're trying to bring unity to the church. And all of these blasphemies against the Immaculate Heart, the reason they offend God is because he himself is showing himself through the Mother of God, that he has complete power and authority over sin and redemption. So that's what she stands for. And so we want our brothers and sisters in the Protestant churches to know Mary. We want their children to know this beautiful mother. Because they don't understand her doesn't mean that they're in sin, but we're trying to help them to see. We're trying to open eyes and open hearts.
My board operator and producer today was saying to me, you know, sometimes it's hard to get to Mass on Saturday. You know, what happens if Mass is not readily available? How do you make First Saturday devotion?
You can offer your Sunday morning Holy Communion in reparation for the sins against the Immaculate Heart. Just remember to do it the next morning. So that is, Jesus did say that to Lucia. He you know, he gave a lot of leeway for us to practice this.
Yeah.
But don't make it a habit of, well, I don't, you know, don't every first Saturday. I'm just going to go tomorrow and try to get to Saturday Mass. It's really helpful if a church has a Saturday morning Mass and confession, and you can do it in the morning and then get on with your day, because I know how Saturdays get away from us.
Yeah, they fly pretty
quickly. But I will say, Drew, too, I will just say, once you've done five, you've merited the grace of her help at your, you know, the final grace at your time of your salvation, time of your death, and then just do what you can after that. You know, I just, every first Saturday, it's my ding ding, I got to go to confession. You know, it's in a habit now that I go do this. So make it a habit, and every first Saturday, you're dedicating yourself to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
Well, look, my apologies, everyone. Hold on. I know I have about a moment here left, and I just want to get, I want to provide for anybody who wants to learn more about First Saturday devotion or Lady of Fatima, the Rosary, these promises. What's the best place to get that? Is just bluearmy.com?
Yeah, and can I just direct people?
Sure.
We have a brand new First Saturday kit that we put together.
Awesome.
If you go to shopfatima.com and go under Blue Army Press, you'll see First Saturday devotion material. Beautiful book by Father Apostoli. He wrote called Treasures of First Saturday Devotion. Gives explanations for the blasphemies, powder practices, meditations on the rosary. Everything is there.
Sounds great. Well, thank you, Barb, for all that you do. I'm here to support you and spread greater devotion to Our Lady. You can pray the rosary tonight with Father Rocky at 7 p.m. It's one of the other requests of Our Lady to pray the rosary daily. It's a beautiful time of prayer. I'm out of time for the day. I will be back again until our paths cross. I'll pray for you. Please remember me in your prayers. Have a great week.